The Buffalo News Ice Time podcast is brought to you by Express Windows. Windows starting at $359 installed. Visit expresswindowsinc.com.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Ice Time podcast here at buffalonews.com. This is news sports columnist Mike Harrington, joined as always by Sabres beat reporter Rachel Lindsay. And Rachel, I think the first thing we ought to promise our viewers and listeners here is this podcast will not go overtime. A very important point, given what's gone on with the Sabres this week, as they're in the midst of a five-game streak of overtime games. They just extended that with Tuesday night's loss to the Utah Mammoth in the J.J. Paterka return game at KeyBank Center. And the Sabres now are looking for a home game against St. Louis on Thursday, a road game against Carolina on Saturday, to start a whole bunch of road trips in the month of November. But let's look back a little here to this string of overtime, first of all, and what was your takeaway from a fifth straight overtime game, this one ending very early on a first-minute goal from Clayton Keller of the Mammoth?
My first thing I said to you was, it was late in the third period, I said, so when's the last time the Sabres went to five straight overtime games? I'm thinking it has to be years and years ago, but you found out it was only, what, 2022. Yeah, which it's not that long ago. It's post COVID. It's the post COVID, post pandemic era. But one thing we've seen, in these last five games that have either gone to overtime or to a shootout, Sabres aren't creating enough offensive chances in three-on-three play. The first thing I wrote down on my list was this team has to put more shots on goal or at least create more scoring chances in overtime. You got more ice to work with the three-on-three players. You've got an opportunity to put your best three players on the ice, the best three creative players as well, too. I did a little math this morning. The Sabres had, late in the wee hours last night after the 2-1 overtime loss to Utah, Sabres have four shots on goal in 12 minutes and 15 seconds of overtime this season. In those last five overtime or shootout games, that's one shot every 3 minutes of play. Opponents, meanwhile, have 12 shots on goal in the 12-15 of overtime they've played against the Sabres this season, those last five games, and they have four goals in that time. So last night, we saw Clayton Keller end overtime in less than a minute after Alex Tuch put one shot on, I'm going to butcher his name, I call the Utah goalie from last name Veggie. I cannot pronounce his last name. How do you say his last name?
Karol Vemelka.
Let's call him Veggie.
The day is silent.
And he stopped the shot. He passed it off to a teammate who passed the shot to Clayton Keller. Clayton Keller basically made it into a one-on-three game. The Utah made the Sabres flat-footed. And that's the second overtime I've seen that happen to the Sabres. It happened against Boston last week after Rasmus Dahlin wiped out and everybody looked like they were in a panic to get back on defense and go against Boston. And then Tuesday night, again, Keller basically made this into a one-on-three situation, weaved through a bunch of Sabres defenders, including out of the reach of Jack Quinn, and basically caught Alex Lyon and ended the game 47 seconds in.
So the Sabres I did have a chance to talk to Alex Tuch after practice on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the overtime issue. His point was he had a good shot. He had a good chance in the first minute, and Vemelka made the save. The thing could have been over right there. He thought that the whistle was going to blow and there was going to be a face-off. That's why he had peeled back out of the zone. Lindy Ruff wasn't real happy with that Tuesday night after the game, but the Sabres thought there was a whistle coming. The whistle didn't come, and the Utah defenseman yelled at Vemelka to move the puck, and that's how they went down the ice. They went to the other end, and if you watch the tape, Alex Tuch kind of gets picked off. I think it was Mikhail Sergachev, the Utah defenseman, picked Alex Tuch off, leaving Keller to just go around Jack Quinn, who, like you said, completely flat-footed in front of the net. Part of me wonders if the Sabres need to think about their disbursement of personnel in overtime. If you have Alex Tuch with another forward, with Jack Quinn, do you need a defenseman? Do you need to play some of these overtimes with two defensemen out there? You got to think about, do you need to go Dahlin, Byram, and a forward? It might help you, because so far it's been an issue there, and it's been different losses in overtime. The breakaway for Tavares in Toronto, Dowling blowing the tire in Boston. This one where they just basically got cooked in their own zone with coverage issues. And the same thing happening against Columbus, coverage issues in their defensive zone. So there's no one overriding theme here. The other thing Tuck had to say, and we talked about, they are in a stretch where they have one regulation loss in 10 games. Now, they have four overtime losses, which no one else in the East has. But the East is so tightly packed here. Here's the stat for you, Rachel. When the Leafs wiped out their 3-0 deficit Monday night against Pittsburgh in the third period to win 4-3, had they lost that game in regulation, they would have been last in the Eastern Conference. They won that game, and at the end of the night, they were sixth in the Eastern Conference. They had been a 10-spot difference on one period of hockey. So the other point Alex Tuck made is, keep getting our points. We want to get 2 points here. We want to create something in overtime. But this thing is so crazy. Just keep playing. Keep getting points. And one loss in regulation in 10 games is really good.
Don't wait months for new windows on your home. Express Windows can have them installed in just weeks with high-quality double-hung windows starting at only $359. Call Express Windows for a free at-home estimate or stop by our showroom on Delaware Avenue in Tonawanda.
So, Rachel, we've had a discussion on overtime. The one thing that really jumps out at me this year with the Sabres, though, is the success they've had on special teams. The power play was not good against Utah. It really didn't generate a whole lot. But it has been pushing the top 10 in the league for a while. But the penalty kill is an area the Sabres really struggled in last year. And right now, they are leading the NHL in the penalty kill. And they did a great job again against Utah. You're going to be focusing on the penalty kill in an upcoming story for the Buffalo News here in Thursday's paper. And the one thing I wanted to ask you about is what have been some of the good issues that you found in the penalty kill in terms of personnel, goaltending? Why is this working so well in your mind?
The penalty kill has been the bright spot about the Sabres. And they're first in the NHL entering today at 90.9% in their first 13 games. They've given up 4 goals on 73 shots in 44 power plays by opponents in their first 13 games. By comparison, Ottawa is last in the league in the penalty kill. They've given up 15 goals on 40 penalties in 13 games. And for some context for our listeners, in hockey, any penalty kill that's above 80% efficiency is good. 82% is great. Anything above 83 to 85% is elite. So what's worked for the Sabres, and I talked to a couple of the players in the locker room, did a little bit of numbers crunching as well. The Sabres pressure opponents on the penalty kill, especially when they've got four guys on the ice to the opponent's 5. Another thing I noticed, they have not had to defend a 3-on-5 situation so far this year. So that's helped too. A coach years ago, Tim Whitehead, when he was at the University of Maine, told me, you get a 5-on-3, you got to score on those. They're money in the bank. Another thing about the Sabres, they effectively clear pucks, which Lindy Ruff said was an issue last year. Got to get the puck out of the zone. I mean, not so much winging it all the way to the ice, but just so it's out of reach of the opponent. Just so the opponent has to work to get it back because you kill time. You ever hear the term killing time? It's very well applicable to this. Last year's penalty kill with the Sabres was at 76.3%. In NHL context, that is not good. Another thing the Sabres are doing, they're closing entry points for teams to come into the zone. That's been one of Matias Samuelson's strengths so far this season. We're going to be talking a little bit more about Matias Samuelson down the road, but he's been having this really strong start to this year after a little bit of a malign last year, and his contributions on the penalty kill have been one of them. I dug a little deeper into the shots against the Sabres over the first 13 games on the penalty kill. The number of shots has decreased over the course of 13 games. Opponents took 49 shots on the power play in the first 5 games against the Sabres. That was cut down to 24 shots against the Sabres on the power play in the next 8 games, including 6 last night by Utah. And there's also a saying in hockey, your best penalty killer is a good goalie. So Alex Lyon, Colton Ellis, and UPL, according to Natural Stat Trick, have had a save percentage in 4-on-5 hockey of 0.946. That's really good. And also, the other thing I always looked at, and Michael Kesslering had brought this up as well, size matters. 5 of the Sabres penalty killers are at least 6'3", including Michael Kesslering, who is 6'5", Jordan Greenway, who's starting at minutes on the penalty kill, 6'6". They can use that side to the size of their advantage to cut off lanes, to cut off angles for shots, or even to just get bodies in front of pucks or bodies in front of players and cut down those opportunities.
You know, the two things that jumped out at me, like you said, the goaltending, Alex Lyon especially, last I looked was in the 940s on the penalty kill. The other thing is they've really made a conscious effort here to seal off the middle. There were a lot of guys coming right down the gut on them last year. They have kept the puck to the outside. They have kept a lot of the shots to the outside. And certainly a shot from the wall is not going to be nearly the kind of high danger chance that a shot down the middle is. They've been able to clear the front of the net. They've been able to prevent guys from cutting through their box. It's made a big difference here. And the other thing about your penalty kill, if you have all those clears and you frustrate the power play, you create negative momentum for your opponent. And there have not been a lot of power play chances against the Sabres where the opponent has been skating through the zone chance after chance here, getting a lot of momentum for themselves. So the Sabres have actually created the momentum on their own penalty kill. And it's a huge difference. When you have a power play percentage and a penalty kill percentage that combine over 100%, and the Sabres have been in that range all year, it's a big factor in the game, and they lost a lot of games last year on the special teams that they are not losing on the special teams this year at all. And that's the unfortunate part. You'd like to see a few more power play goals. They had a stretch where they got very hot. Now the last couple games they've been a little cold here on the power play, but you know they're just not losing the special teams battle because they so rarely give up a power play goal.
Right. And the other thing I've noticed is that when the Sabres get a shorthanded offensive chance, they will take it. It's not necessarily shot. It's possessing the puck. It's, you know, keeping it in the other end of the ice, you know, down by the opposing goal turn. They've only got two shorthanded goals so far this year. We're 13 games in. There's still a lot of hockey left. But watching them get that shorthanded time is really important. I remember asking, it was Tim Whitehead when I covered the University of Maine. We had a long talk about the penalty kill one day. And I said, Tim, you know, why doesn't your team just clear it out and kill time? He says, if you can take another chance at a shot on goal or get in by the goalie, do it. Why not? That helps your offensive momentum.
So there's an area that's really been a key point, a key success point. Now let's move to an area that's been a real sore spot for this club so far. Injuries. Huge issue here. Now let's go through the update from Lindy Ruff on Wednesday. Matias Samuelsson was not at practice Wednesday. That was apparently a maintenance day. Expected to play against St. Louis on Thursday. Tyson Kozak likely returning against the St. Louis Blues on Thursday. Now, who does that leave out? That leaves out a lot of forwards. Jason Zucker, illness, on IR, won't be on the ice. Yuri Kulik, illness, you know, fluid buildup in the ear, not going to be playing against the St. Louis Blues. Josh Norris, obviously, you know, has been out since opening day. There was an update on Josh Norris on Wednesday. He is skating. He is back skating. No timetable yet. Initially, they have never issued an actual timetable, but they kind of agreed with Elliot Friedman's report that it's an 8-week injury, which would take us near Christmas before you'd probably see Josh Norris back. As I'm looking on the list, there's so many of them. Am I forgetting another forward?
Zach Benson. You know, we've got that lower body injury that he sustained.
Zach Benson was seen. Yeah, he was seen in the arena walking with a boot on his foot.
Okay, because I was saying, I saw Josh Norris in the arena as well too. So they're around the team. I did not see Benson for total, you know, total full disclosure. I was not at practice today, so Mike was our eyes and ears from Buffalo News. I'll be back at the morning skate tomorrow.
So here's something that has developed, however, out of the injuries. You know, every time you have a negative, you try to find a positive, but it hasn't been hard to find a positive here because Josh Dunn and Isaac Rosén and Noah Ostlund have all scored their first NHL goals within the last week or so. Ostlund connected for the only goal the Sabres had against Utah, and he's been playing on a line with Isaac Rosén, with Jack Quinn, and you're seeing the guys from Rochester who have been standouts in the AHL putting the puck in the net here in Buffalo. So for the both the long term and the short term, how important has this been in your eyes just to see these guys come up here and contribute, whereas maybe in the past you haven't seen those kind of contributions from them?
Yeah, and this is my first year on the beat. A lot of what I learned about Isaac Rosanne from was what my predecessor Lance Lesowski had written about him. And you know, one thing I saw about Isaac Rosanne, you know, in his short time so far with the Sabres, he's played inspired hockey, I want to say. He wants Absolutely. To be here, even in a third line role. You know, one of the problems Lance had written about last year was that Isaac Rosanne was being put on the third line or the fourth line and wasn't getting the right opportunities to really showcase his talent or maximize it. And I, watching him in, you know, in the short time he's been with the Sabres so far, he needed people around him that would, for lack of a better term, lift him up. What's the saying again? The rising tide lifts all ships. You know, he would, you know, and he needed those people, right people around him, not just to be told, put on a line, to be told, get to it, you know, show us your stuff. Sometimes you need those good teammates as well. He and Jack Quinn are really good friends. So he said, you know, when I talked to him after he got called up, I said, do you think the chemistry you have with Jack, both off and on the ice, is going to help? He says, oh yeah, he's, you know, he's my pal. I'm really looking forward to getting on the ice with him as well. You know, he looks like he wants to be here. Not that he didn't want to be here. Doesn't look frustrated. Doesn't skate off the ice with his head down. And Noah Osland the same way as well. He's understanding his role, you know, and maximize. That's another thing. Another guy, I think guys are looking at this as an audition. They don't know how long they're going to be here for. Maybe they do know how long they're going to be here for, but they know they have to showcase their best stuff and say, hey, what can I do? Even Josh Dunn is coming in as this fourth line grinder. He's got this big, rangy body. He works really well on the fourth line with Beck Malenstein and Peyton Krebs. As we saw against Washington Columbus, that line is not going to be pushed around. And they want to get under an opponent's skin to kind of throw them off their game a little bit going up against one of the top two lines of the opposing team.
And Josh Dunn, don't forget, he's got skills. He had a 20-goal season with Cleveland in the AHL a couple years ago. So he's a guy who's also capable of putting the puck in the net. Now, here's the outgrowth of the injuries, though, and it came up with Lindy Ruff on Wednesday. Tage Thompson has been without his two line mates, Benson, Kulik, both on the shelf. So Tage Thompson has 5 goals thus far in the first 13 games of the season. Certainly his pace is well behind what it's been. He's had a lot of opportunities in some games, and some games against, like you see against Utah, not as many. In practice on Wednesday, they put Tage Thompson with Ryan McLeod and Alex Tuch. So they're going to try, looks like, another a trio there to kind of help Tage Thompson. And it's difficult, Lindy Ruff admitted, to see Tage Thompson not scoring like he's normally been doing because he just has lost all continuity of his line mates with Benson and Kulik both out. So when you look at this situation injury-wise, I suppose it makes the most sense that the guy who's most impacted by all of this is Thompson, who should be Buffalo's top scorer. And so far we haven't seen that. But what do you think about moving up McLeod, who has been pretty good in recent games, and putting him with Thompson, trying to see if he can kickstart Thompson's offense?
I was surprised when I saw the lines come out that the Sabres were going to break up that second line of Josh Doan, Ryan McLeod, Alex Tuch. They've been a very productive line. We've talked about this earlier. That is this line that is not afraid to attack the goal and take what I love, the high danger scoring chances, which is something they've been an incredibly productive line, not even just so much for goals or points, but for getting their chances. Maybe that was part of Lindy's strategy and the coaching staff strategy. It's kind of work a little mojo over to Tage Thompson and see if that helps him out as well, too.
Right.
McLeod. And McLeod's a, he's, you know, he's a plucky little player. I like his contributions. You know, maybe mix things up a little bit. I was more surprised that the second line was broken up as opposed to the lines being juggled the way they were. But when you only have so many guys that are able to be on a roster, when you lose a top line caliber center like Jiří Kulik, even though it's only going to be for 3-4 games max, let me tell you, ear infections, fluid buildup in the ear is nothing to mess with. It affects everything. You need to affect your equilibrium. It affects how you breathe. It affects the way you visually see things. So I feel for Jiří Kulik on that, on the ear thing. So you lose that. And a guy who, he isn't really been playing to his potential yet. So maybe this break comes at a good time. He can kind of get things figured out. Jason Zucker, that net front veteran presence, you lose that as well, even though for a few games as well. And what did Lindy say to us earlier in the week? He's getting worse before he gets better with his illness as well. Too.
Yeah, I was going to say, get this guy some medication here. Why is he getting worse?
I get some good antibiotics. But the first thing, when I heard these two illnesses, about these two players getting illnesses, I thought, well, something's going to be working its way through the team. It's that time of year. The kids are in school. The weather's changing. You know, it's windy and rainy here. I was expecting the Wicked Witch of the West to blow through my neighborhood earlier this season. And when I saw the news came out that Matias Samuelsson was on the ice for practice today, my first thought was, one, here comes the unexpected collective gasp. No, he's our best defenseman right now. You ever think we'd hear people say that about Matias Samuelsson a year ago? But I also thought, oh, I'll bet Matias Samuelsson's sick as well. Dude, not just a maintenance day, nothing to panic about. You need those when you play a sport like hockey. But I did wonder if the illnesses were going to become an issue because locker rooms are tight quarters. Guys are around each other all the time. Germs and bacteria are jumping everywhere. I understand why this team is taking some precautions by telling Yuri Kulik and Jason Zucker, stay home.
All right, Rachel, final segment here. We're going to go quickly around the boards with a couple items of note from the NHL. Eastern Conference standings. How freaky is this situation where teams can jump 6, 8, 10 spots in a night? And we saw, I think as recently as 2 days ago, 10 teams had either 13 or 14 points.
I know. Look at Toronto. I mean, it's 2 weeks ago as the Blue Jays are in the World Series. I thought the sky was falling in, up in Toronto.
It's a good thing the Blue Jays were in the World Series. No one was paying attention.
I was paying attention. I want to know what was happening in Toronto. And the other thing, I wanted to extrapolate on this a little bit last night after my game story. When this shows where those overtime points can be so valuable to the Sabres. They lost out on 4 points by getting only 1 point with overtime losses. The Sabres are, I'm looking at the standings right now. They have 14 points and are one of three teams tied for fifth in the 8-team Atlantic Division. If they had those 4 points in overtime, they'd be tied for second with the Red Wings right now. This is all hypothetical. I'm extrapolating off the cuff here, but that shows even how valuable those points are. I'm looking just the Atlantic Division
of those four, even,
you're in the mix as well. I mean, it's 13 teams, and Pittsburgh as well too came out on a heater, as the kids say. They were the number one team in the NHL at this point as well too. But it also begs the question, Mike, when are we going to start seeing separation among these teams? Is it when some team just drops five in a row and then gets his head handed to him when you can't make the playoffs because they didn't have enough points down the road? When's separation going to happen?
That's what Alex Tuck was talking to me about today. You know, usually you expect it between Thanksgiving and Christmas, but he said it doesn't feel like a year where some team is going to run out 8, 9, 10 wins in a row. It feels like a year where a lot of teams run out 3-1-1 over five games, then they lose one, then they run three more wins. Nobody seems to really have the kind of team to run 8 or 10 in a row out there. So he expects there will be some separation. We're seeing a little bit in the West already, but not in the East at all. And he said it may take another month, well toward Christmas, but he did admit this was crazy. Okay, so on the next point along the standings, a quick reaction from you on the New York Rangers. Let me find this here. The New York Rangers got shut out at home for the fourth time this season in 6 home games. They have scored 6 goals at home this season. The most recent shutout was against Carolina. They've scored 6 goals at home in 6 games. 5 of them were against San Jose. So in all their games,
Did they lose to San Jose in the game?
They lost in overtime.
Yeah, they lost. It was a high-scoring game, I remember.
Right. 5 goals against San Jose, 1 goal against Minnesota. The New York Rangers have not scored a goal at home against the Eastern Conference all season. What is going on with the New York Rangers?
I thought bringing in Mike Sullivan was going to constitute a culture change with that team. I thought Chris Drury was going to right the ship and say, let's get things done. But nothing's changed with the Rangers. I feel bad. My neighbor's a Rangers fan. He's been telling me all about his, how do I explain to my kids what's going on here? I said, Will, it's just a bad culture in that organization. That's really what it is. They say, we're going to turn around. Nothing has happened. Nothing has changed. Even though they changed the players, they haven't changed the team attitude or the team culture yet.
All right. Last item. And this plays into Buffalo and plays into new Highmark Stadium. Gary Bettman kind of dropped a bit of a bombshell. He appeared on Monday Night Football with Jerry Jones. And they announced that the 2027 Stadium Series game will be hosted by the Dallas Stars in AT&T Stadium, Jerry World. Now, we have Stadium Series coming up in 2026 in Tampa with the Lightning playing the Boston Bruins at Raymond James Stadium. Now 2027, Dallas Stars against an opponent to be announced in AT&T Stadium. What do you think? 2028, it sure seems like the Stars are aligning for the Buffalo Sabres to host a Stadium Series game at the new Highmark Stadium on the 20th anniversary of that iconic Winter Classic against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Are we heading down that hill where that's eventually where this is going to land in a year or so?
I believe so. Reading the tea leaves and thinking about how excited Gary Bettman was when he came to Buffalo on opening night, and I asked him, so, you know, is there a possibility we could see another outdoor game come into Buffalo? He's, you know, what was his answer? He said, we want to do it. And you're right. The timing of it. I remember you were there. I remember watching on television. I was living in Portland, Maine at the time, watching that first Winter Classic out at, out at the Ralph. I still call it the Ralph. Sidney Crosby scores that game winner against Ryan Miller. And I will tell you this, I hadn't watched hockey in a while before that game. That game got me back into hockey. I was like, all right, let's go. Let's watch every hockey game after this. And it's, who knows how much longer Sidney Crosby's going to be playing? He's ageless at this point. He's drinking from the fountain of youth. Could be a swan song for Sidney Crosby. I think it should be a 20th anniversary Penguins Sabres game if it comes to. And right now, the tea leaves are reading like it should happen here. And I think it should. I think it would only be right to commemorate the first of its kind, but bring it back on a landmark date in the new stadium.
Yeah, and I mean it can't be the Winter Classic on January 1st anymore because of the NFL schedule is much different than it was in 2008. So Pete Guelli, the Sabres, the brass have already talked about it has to be the Stadium Series game in February or March, and that'd be fine to stage a little bit of an anniversary celebration with the Pittsburgh Penguins. And that's going to be, you know, probably another year before they make that final call and announcement decision, but that you're right. It does seem to be heading in that direction. And here we are now. Dallas has 2027. Next up is 2028. And that would be the announcement of the Sabres hosting out at the new Highmark Stadium if it comes to that. But that's down the road here, obviously. The Sabres, in the current edition, have a bunch of games coming up here. Rachel's getting her suitcase packed.
I am. I was doing it this afternoon. It's going to be in the 60s in Carolina, Utah, and Denver, and then you go to Detroit a week from Saturday as well, too, where the weather probably might not be as cooperative as it will be when I go down to Carolina as well, too. But I like the stretch. This is the first significant road trip. We've had a lot of one-offs so far. Boston twice, Montreal, Toronto. They're going to be on the road for, a little more than a week, so they have to get acclimated to the road, living out of these nice hotels and out of these nice suitcases. Then they have to go out to Salt Lake City next week where they're going to quickly get acclimated. Salt Lake's, 4,200 feet above sea level. And they go to Denver, Mile High City as well, too. You know, second time facing Utah in 8 days, you know, quote unquote, the revenge game, if you will. But they're going to see a lot of the land. They're going to see a lot of the league as well, too. And they're going to figure out, all right, what do we have to do on the road for an extended time on the road, getting uncomfortable to get comfortable?
And the Sabres don't have a win on the road yet. They're 0-2-2. And I think there's only a couple teams left in the league that don't have a win on the road. So that's another – it has not become an issue yet because they've only been playing one-offs, like you say, but a four-game trip now. It's going to become an issue if they struggle to get points there. So we're going to have all the coverage for you both at home and on the road. Rachel's going to be, like she said, in Carolina. in Salt Lake City, in Colorado. I'll have you covered when the Sabres come back this direction in Detroit. I'm Mike Harrington for Rachel Lindsay. Please follow all the coverage in the Buffalo News and here at BuffaloNews.com.
Express Windows is a best of 716 favorite for window and door installation. They also offer discounts for military personnel and seniors. Learn more at ExpressWindowsInc.com. Express Windows. Fast, easy, affordable.